Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated. Visit MySpecialMortgage.com. That's MySpecialMortgage.com.
104.3 The Fan presents Big Al and D-Mac with the big story of the day.
Troy Rank is in for Alfred today, and I'm happy to have Troy here. My man, sporting his UCCS baseball hoodie, where they have come on. They're not the Buffaloes. Hang on. Oh, gosh. It's sort of derivative of Buffalo, isn't it?
No.
Okay.
But it's close.
Eagle?
The Mountain Lions.
Mountain Lions.
Things that you would see in D-Mac's yard for $200.
There's a lot of mountain lions down in the Springs area, though. That's for sure. You see them there all the time.
There's rattlesnakes up on that pulpit rock behind center field fence.
Yeah, watch out. Watch out. Bye week. I'm happy for you to be here. Alfred is celebrating his birthday by not being here. You know, that's a good celebration for Alfred. And we had Chad yesterday, Troy for the next couple days. So always good to see Troy here. And just sort of catch up on stuff, take a breath, as it's the bye week. So maybe I should just go over some stuff with you in terms of, you know, before we get to that, really quick. Do you think Jokic getting fined for using a homophobic slur had an impact on his performance on the court?
Something was bothering him. I've heard that there's the possibility of an injury involved with a hand or something that could dissuade him from shooting. But what he did last night, frankly, was inexcusable. Passing up open shots when he's the centerpiece of their offense.
That looked like a mental thing.
Yeah, something was going on. I have no doubt whether that contributed to it. His fine earlier in the day, and he was embarrassed by it. I don't know, but that's something. And honestly, he's got to be accountable to that. The fact that he didn't talk after the game, at least I can't find anywhere he spoke. And if those who are following us on Twitter or on the text line, please let me know. Because I haven't heard an explanation from him. And frankly, he owes you one after a game like that.
Well, let me ask you something. And I'm not around the Nuggets all that much. So even if you're not there all that much, you're there more than I am. That's for sure. How's his English and English comprehension?
Yeah, it's still a work in progress. There's no doubt. So possibility he didn't, and I'm not going to excuse behavior. There's a possibility he didn't completely understand what he was saying.
Because is it possible that in a locker room type setting, that sort of reference or joke is made amongst teammates, whether it's appropriate or not, perhaps it happens, and he doesn't really possibly understand the context that he might have felt a little set up?
I don't know about set up, if he just used it and didn't realize what he was saying. I don't think his teammates would do that to him. I think what you're on to something that he's heard it from teammates, and then he used it in a setting that was inappropriate.
Right.
And not that there's necessarily an appropriate setting, but I've been in enough locker rooms, coach kids forever. Things get said in those settings that you wouldn't say in a classroom, you wouldn't say at the dinner table, and you wouldn't say to a reporter.
Right.
You know, but I don't. My bigger issue is, he needs to acknowledge that he made a mistake. But going forward, what is going on with him? The idea he's not shooting, D-Mac, I mean, they're one of the best stories in the NBA right now. And suddenly he's got an aversion to shooting? He's not a great defender. I don't need him to be out there going 6 rebounds and 7 assists. I can find that guy anywhere. I need him to score. He is so unique because of his ability to score. As a big man, especially from three-point range in, I mean, I don't know. I just want to know what's going on. And something clearly, you're right. It looked more like Kobe Bryant in the NBA Finals against Detroit, if you remember, when he decided in the second half of a game he just wasn't going to shoot anymore to prove a point.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah, Zach's sending me a text. Thank you, Zach. Not just about the fine. Look at his previous three games prior to last night, averaging 5 points, taking 3 shots, 5 shots, etc.
That's why you wonder if there's an injury involved. If there's something going on where he's trying to work through an injury. That would, as weird as this sounds,
it was
that
just
would
so
be good news.
It was so
be an explanation.
And then the guy doesn't take a shot the whole game.
Right.
And then you design a play for him? I guess. I mean, that's what happened, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you not throw the ball to Jamal Murray in that situation and say, hey, Yeah, we're going to go with the guy who just drained almost 50 the other night instead of the dude that hasn't shot the entire game. One of the more bizarre things I've seen in quite a while.
Well, again,
it's hard to understand. I mean, you know,
if he's not a scorer, their team's different. I mean, there's no way of looking at it. If he's not a scorer, they are not a team that can win the West. If he's scoring, they can win the West. They can not win the West. They can win their division.
Yeah, and I don't mean to go sour on the Nuggets because they're off to such an amazing start.
Oh, a great start.
And it's not like, I mean, geez, they're going right down the wire, and just weird. That's all. Just an odd thing. It looks like the Avalanche are, they got off to a pretty hot start, but boy, they have been sieve-like giving up goals and, not good. So they got some issues there. I'm sorry. Avs fans are like always dying for us. Like, you gotta talk about the Avs. You talk about the Avs more. Talk about the Avs. Okay. They've given up like, 17 goals in 3 games? How's that for talk? Some tough love right there, but you gotta be careful in the NHL, Troy, because things can slip away before you know it. Like, you say, oh, we're not doing too bad. Oh, it's an overtime loss, or it's, oh, gee whiz, that we just lost by one. Then you look at the standings and you're like, hey, we're 9 points out of first place. What happened? Whoa! Gee, that was quick. I don't know, because sometimes hockey games get blurry because it's ties and overtime and shootouts and, you know, oh, it feels like, it's just one game, just one goal that you lost by. And it's like, you know, it's not a big deal. It adds up quickly. So Avs probably have a little bit of a way to go, but I don't want to dampen the enthusiasm, Troy. God forbid. I want to stay positive about our teams. I want everybody to make the playoffs.
Well, the Rapids didn't, right? Aren't they done?
Don't know.
They were so bad. So they're out.
That is remarkable you even knew that, to be honest with you.
Because I anchor sportscast once in a while on Saturdays, so I have to know.
Oh, okay.
But
is that when they play?
They play on the weekends.
You know, not to rip on the Rapids, because I enjoy going to the Rapids games. I played soccer my whole life. But talk about an impossible sport to just, like, gauge in terms of standings and what games mean and all that sort of stuff. I mean, you have playoffs that are... Think about this for a second, everybody. You have playoffs that are two-game playoffs.
With aggregate.
Yeah. Sell that one. Why in the world would you have any... It's one of the dopiest things I've ever seen and heard about in my life. Either have a 2 out of 3 or just have single elimination. But no. We got to be Europe or South America or I don't know where. But it was fun when the Rapids, like, you know, win and go to the playoffs and stuff. And
playoffs?
Yeah, I don't know.
But the Avs are a good young team. They'll get through this. I mean, because they're exciting. They're a good watch. The Nuggets are a great watch.
Mm-hmm.
This Jokic mystery notwithstanding.
Yeah, it's so early in the season.
But it's so early. But yeah. They're a great watch. It's just what's made the Nuggets so jarring. The Nuggets have become what the Rockies were for so many years, where you just sense that it's something that whatever can go wrong will go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the Rockies were for the better part of a decade. And certainly the Broncos won't be down that long. But for them to have back-to-back losing seasons, they haven't done that since 1972. So when people say fans overreact,
people to get over that. Okay, keep going.
That's part of it.
I'll talk everybody off the ledge off that one.
No. I agree with you, because there were a lot of seasons they had a losing season, and the next year they were 8-8.
Right.
It wasn't like they went 4-12, 12-4. Because I went through and did the math this summer, because I was curious, like, when was the last time they had back-to-back losing seasons? And I kept going back and back. I'm like, what? 1972? But they did have a lot of years, D-Mac, to your point, where they went, you know, 6-10, 8-8.
Right.
4-12, 8-8. So,
who cares?
But it is still jarring. In this market, having grown up here and lived nearly my entire life, to have the Broncos in back-to-back years be non-competitive and essentially out of the playoff race.
Yeah, it's weird for them to go 3 straight years without making the playoffs.
No doubt.
I mean, you know, you want to look up, hey, I don't know if you got any help back there, Kyle, but when was the last time, this is a better one, when was the last time the Broncos went 3 straight years without making the playoffs?
I think it was Shanahan, the end of the Shanahan era, wasn't it?
Okay.
When he
you could be right.
He kept going 8-8 every year, and he had to like win the final game. I wasn't covering it then, but they had like win the final game like three different years to get in the playoffs, and they kept
losing.
I'd
have to look at it. Yeah, I mean, we could look it up. Was it 3 years in a row before McDaniels?
It was right at that number.
That's a little tricky, because if it was 3 years before he got McDaniels, well, we didn't go with McDaniels and didn't go the year after McDaniels. So that means there was a 5 year stretch.
I don't think it was.
You sure about that?
Yeah, well, we need to double check that. I'll get it. We'll get it. Because
we need to hang on here a little bit, because we may be looking at that again. So the losing season thing is tricky, because I don't know. Case Keenum being asked about winning seven games in a row.
2006 to 2010, 5 years.
Five years.
It was Shanahan.
Hmm.
Yeah, I knew, but they were right on the number like three of those years. I was covering baseball then, but I just remember like they had to win. You would have lived it. They had to win the final game a couple different times,
yeah,
and they would have been in.
Yep.
I can't see any scenario. And again, I covered the Rockies of 07, which was as magical as anything I've ever covered,
mm-hmm,
and I would assume ever will cover. The Rockies winning 21 out of 22 is more realistic than the Broncos team winning seven in a row.
I saw something where it's happened. There's a 3% chance of the Broncos like making the playoffs at this point. Something crazy like that. Like it has happened. A team's 3-6, and I think they've gone to the postseason. I believe it's happened like three times in NFL history.
Four times in recent history.
Since 1990. Gotcha. Thank you. Look at this. You guys are great. Four teams, 3%, have started 3-6, made it to the playoffs. 94 Patriots, who went 10-6, so they won seven in a row. Lions, 95, went 10-6, seven in a row. Jaguars, 9-7. And 2012, Washington Redskins with Mike Shanahan.
So an RG3.
All right.
Crazy.
All right. I mean, that's, it's happened. It's happened four different times.
Those Jaguars beat us.
I've covered that game. That was the biggest and most disappointing loss in Broncos history, because that might have been the best Broncos team I've ever covered. They could have very easily won three straight Super Bowls.
Oh, Alfred will tell you that too, for sure.
That team was so
talented. But, you know, Alfred also tells the tale that that loss may have propelled their habits and spirit towards things through two more Super Bowls, and he's not quite sure if they would have that same fire and desire if they didn't have that loss in their back pocket.
Yeah, and there's something to be said for that, because that clearly motivated them. They were embarrassed by that loss. Jimmy Smith and Mark Brunell.
Oh, it stings
now. Combination.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't believe it. I covered an Avs game that night. So that's when the Big Mac and Mile High were sharing the parking
mm-hmm.
lot. So I remember just walking across the parking lot and to go cover an Avs game. I was working in Longmont.
By the way, just crazy. Very random trivia. Did you know that Mark Brunell's dad lives here in Colorado and works as an umpire?
What?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
How about that one? Mark Brunell's dad is here and works as an umpire, like a high school umpire.
There's a guy that played for the Cowboys that umped one of our games two summers ago.
The only reason I would know that is because he came up to me and said, I'm Mark Brunell's dad. I listen to your show. And I'm like, wow, that is beyond random.
And he ejected you from the game?
As he was throwing me out. As I was being tossed for arguing strikes.
You can't eject me. It's my farewell game. Let me be the first to bid you farewell.
It's always a bummer when you're watching a game and you're grinding away because you think the umpire is terrible. And then, like, between innings, he goes, hey, what's up, D-Mac? And I'm like, oh, hey, how you doing? And my kid was safe, but it's all right. Don't worry about it. So my point about not freaking out here, all right, I don't know. You know what? As fans, you don't want to see them lose. You come back and you beat the Chargers, and then I can hear the rattling of the sabers about, you know, oh, well, hey, it's just one game at a time, and we've got Pittsburgh, and they're down. And then if you win two games in a row, I mean, Troy, hang on. Hey, we're 5-6, and
Well, you'd have a chance then, because the schedule goes Cincinnati, San Francisco, Cleveland, Oakland. That's why I said if they would, I thought they were going to beat Houston at home. You had me on prior to that kickoff. What did we say, 27-24?
I thought they were going to win by one.
I think you had 24-23.
I had 24-23, yep.
Yeah, so if they win that game and then you lose to the Chargers and beat Pittsburgh, you're still in it. Is this, the Houston game and the Jets game haunt them right now.
Yeah.
The Jets game is, it just haunts them right now.
Yeah, but you know, I understand that. But it's not like they were close to beating the Jets. They got whooped. And
no,
they got,
but the Jets
they got
at
whooped
that
from
point
the get-go.
Had lost, what, 3 straight? Were 1-3 with a rookie quarterback.
I got
in
it.
In turmoil
the game
with their defensive coordinator not even working the sideline.
They got in at 1 a.m. in the morning. The game was like at 9. And they, I think they got in at 5. Which is still kind of ridiculous when you think about it, but they were never in the Jets game. So it's Alfred's kind of made this argument too, but I was like, well, it's a loss. It was always going to be a loss. Let's look at the games that could have been a win. You know, the what if game. What if Emmanuel doesn't get a flag during the Rams game? I mean, what happens
they still
there?
They lose that game.
Okay.
They weren't, the game
what happens if Demaryius Thomas catches a ball from Case Keenum that would have won the game against the Chiefs?
That's a game that was very winnable, and they played well enough to win. The Rams game, they did not play well enough to win. Even if Sanders had been a touchdown.
And you go the other way, too, like Oakland. Like, what if the fullback, you know, catches the ball and they get a first down and, you know, the whole thing.
But the two that got away from me, and I know it sounds crazy, but it makes more sense now because the way the Ravens are playing, they were in the Baltimore game. And that penalty on Petco for the push in the back against Harris.
It's brutal.
That was a brutal penalty.
Game-changing
penalty. And Baltimore really, for me, wasn't that good.
So are the Broncos getting better?
They're more. I mean, I hate to say this because it feels like we're patronizing what is a fantastic fan base and very, very passionate and in tune fan base. They're way more competitive this year. As someone who's at every game and every practice, they're way more competitive.
Right.
That's not what Bronco fans want to hear, but they're better. And Stokely and Zach talked about it. The reason they're better is because they have like 5-7 young players now that are really good.
Yeah.
Who give them energy. Human Red Bull. Last year, every time you needed someone to put a little bit of duct tape and chicken wire on it, you looked over and you had some millennial in the corner playing video games with his hat on backwards, walking around like he lettered. I got my letter jacket. I'm good. What? Like they were on scholarship. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I had never seen certain players who had accomplished zero acting like they owned the place. This year, they have a rookie class that's legitimately contributing with Chubb, Sutton, Lindsey, Josie Jewell is starting.
Easy. I have a hard time throwing Lindsey in that mix.
That's fine, because he chose them. They didn't choose
that's
him.
Right.
I get it. They passed
that's
up
right.
on him.
That's right.
But he's on their team, and he's a rookie.
That's true. They were smart enough to keep him.
Baltimore gave him an offer for more money, and he still chose to come here.
Yep.
After they passed him over
the
draft.
That's why I have a hard time talking about him in the draft, because I think the Broncos got lucky when they came to Phil Lindsey.
No doubt.
Is Philip Lindsey choosing the Broncos if he didn't grow up in Aurora?
No.
I doubt it.
But he told me, I've had this conversation with him, and he's right, and it speaks to how he bets on himself, which I know you love, D-Mac, from a player.
Of course.
Is once you don't get drafted in, like, the fifth round, you're better off being a free agent if you really believe in yourself, because now you can pick a team where you believe you can make it. And I know for a fact he came into this training camp 100% convinced he was making the team after a couple practices, like, I'm making this team, and he was thinking he could start.
I guess he was right.
That's what led him here, is not only was it local,
right?
Clearly huge advantage for them, but he got to pick a team where he said, I think I can make this team.
All right, so your overall premise that you got rookies that are contributing.
That look like they have a future. They're not just rookies contributing on a bad team because they're playing because no one else can play.
Mm-hmm.
You got Sutton, Chubb, Lindsey, Jewell, guys who are playing pretty well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
That you said, because that last year they did not have that.
So
there
what
was
is,
no hope
what
last
is,
year.
What is winning? I almost hope that if the Broncos are going to get that 7 loss, it happens sooner than later.
Yeah.
Because this is not the year where an 8-8 team, I mean, the Tebow year was just preposterous on so many magical levels, right? And of all the crazy things that happened during that Tebow year, maybe the craziest was at 8-8, they had the right tiebreakers to win the AFC West. I mean, it was insane.
Because didn't they lose that final game?
They lost the final three games. They lost 7-3 to Kansas City.
7-3 with
Orton. It was the Orton-Tebow battle.
I remember that was one of the worst games I've ever watched.
It was one of the worst NFL games of all time. It was 7-3, and I'll never forget the AFC West Championship hats and T-shirts strewn about in the players' lockers, like, untouched. Like, I mean, it was just like...
They're embarrassed to wear
a little bit. And then, of course, the bigger story that week was Brady Quinn came this close to starting. and then was just a little further away from coming in if Tebow struggled. That was the plan.
Oh, okay.
That was the plan. There is no Orton-Tebow doctrine. But this year in the AFC, I mean, you got the Texans are 6-3. The Bengals are 5-3. As the Steelers are 5-2-1. The Dolphins are 5-4. The Chargers are 6-2. You know, 8-8's not going to cut it this year. Right? Do you agree with me on that?
I agree. 9-7 is probably the number that you have to get to.
At least.
The Colts are a sneaky long shot to get in at 3-5. I don't know that they will. But that's what I'm saying. If the Broncos right now were 4-5, they'd be in it.
They'd be in it, yes.
3-6 feels like they're out of it. It was the same last year. Remember when they were, they were 4-7 when they played the, was it 4-7, 4-6 when they played the Bengals at home? And Elway had said that he thought they had gotten soft, meaning more mentally, but they had gotten soft. Mm. So, like, if they had beaten the Bengals, I think they were going to be 5-7. You're like, okay. They were still in it. This year, not the case. Not the case.
But the crazy thing is there's definitely a scenario, very realistic scenario, where they're 5-4.
Yeah.
Last year, it didn't feel like that. Last year, it was just like, holy cow, we are just getting the barn doors blown off. Every single game, we're not close. This is a disaster. We weren't talking about the minutia that just, you know, cost, oh, should you have called a timeout here and you didn't go here and this. I mean, the smaller things. And this is where I struggle with the coaching, because you want to, I mean, the fans are just, you know, boy, they just want Vance gone. I mean, it's so obvious. For who? For what is exactly your next move? To get a younger coach that has to go through the same sort of growing pains? To get a coach who hasn't been in these game management situations? I don't know. I mean, if you're so close at this point, I want to find out more about Case Keenum. I think your chance to have a quarterback, you passed up on it. And you got Bradley Chubb, and he's really good. But to me, Troy, you're going to fly. It's a sink or swim sort of move, not just this year, but even next year. Unless John Elway is willing to take some sort of massive new approach to his job, which I don't know why he would. I don't see him doing it. Now, is he really going to step back and let John Harbaugh run everything? Really? If you could even get John Harbaugh. I don't even know why, you know, John Harbaugh would find this all that appealing. I don't know why any coach, Troy, would find this job appealing unless he really believed in Case Keenum in the quarterback situation.
I would think it would be an offensive mind. Typically, you go the other direction.
I saw this article today about, like, Eric Bieniemy. And I like Eric. Fine. We've had him on the show a million times. But all I can remember is Eric Bieniemy and John Embry, like, screaming at each other on the sideline at CU during that horrific year. Just massive poor communication, and God, do you remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a nightmare.
Yeah, it was a forgettable season.
And to think that Eric Bieniemy is going to be able to come in and like, be the head guy? Are you kidding me? Yeah.
Yeah, I wish him well, and I think maybe he'll get a chance to be a head coach. I can't see it here.
Right, but guess what? That's the type of guy that, you know, would most fit. So forget that. I'd rather take a coach who's got 2-year experience with the team, even if it hasn't been great. Even if it hasn't been great, Troy. Now, Bill McCartney was pretty terrible record-wise first couple of their years at CU. Unless you just think Vance Joseph is so absurdly incompetent, he'll never get it. You lose your phone. Lost your keys right there.
My keys, I'm out of here. I'll see you later. I just gotta go. I gotta go. This conversation's going terribly wrong for me.
All right, so we're kind of just checking things out. It's a good day. If you got any questions or any feedback, that's great. All sorts of quirky stories. A dude, like a pro athlete, just like quitting during a game. Amazing that that happens. Big Three's coming up next.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web. 303-790-2222. The phone number, SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716. Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web, 303-790-2222. The phone number, SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
It's Big Al and D-Mac with the Big Three.
All right, let's start with a little baseball story here, Troy. Tim Tebow will start with the AAA affiliate in Syracuse, where I used to be the PA announcer for the Sky Chiefs back in the day. Domingo Martinez! You probably haven't really heard of Domingo Martinez, but he was a big deal in Syracuse back in the early 90s, I promise you that. That being said, Timmy will start with the Chiefs or the Sky Chiefs, whatever they call themselves these days. What do you think about Tim Tebow starting in AAA?
Well, it sets him up to play in the big leagues. I think he would have been called up this year had he not
become injured. I understand, yeah.
I admire the fact that he's competing offensively because that's what I didn't know if he could do. He's a great athlete.
Right.
You know, the outfield part, he didn't look great, but you can hide outfielders.
Yeah, whatever.
You know, defense isn't exactly a priority in a lot of teams.
No.
But he's hit. I mean, he's hit okay. He's at least put himself in the conversation.
Now, there is a quirky little deal going on.
There always is with Tim.
This is the quirky deal. The new general manager of the Mets used to work at CAA. That's Tim Tebow's agency.
Right. Brody Von Wagner is the new...
It's something like that.
Brody is the new GM of the Mets.
So he worked at his agency, CAA. So Troy, is this based on merit or is he getting a favor from a friend?
There's definitely a tilt that they know him and they love him, I'm sure, on a personal level. Most 246 hitters, I think he was hitting at the time of his injury, 250 hitters, aren't automatically put in double or in AAA. But because of his age, you could argue he's made enough advance that's like, okay, we got to see what he can do at AAA.
Right.
Usually, if you hit AA pitching, you have a chance to hit Major League pitching because the best prospects are in AA. A lot of them skip AAA.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of a favor, but not so much that it's egregious.
Right.
He's performed enough to where you could make an argument to give him a chance at this point.
Right.
I mean, Michael Jordan hit 202.
Oh, he's a way better baseball player than Michael Jordan. There's no doubt about it.
Part of it's Michael was too tall and his swing was long, couldn't hit a curveball. Tebow's hit enough to give him a chance. I'm fine with it.
Bongos.
Three!
When you look at what happened with Jokic last night.
Yeah.
Do you as a coach, my question to you is, do you go to him as a coach and kind of give him the stern look in the eye like, what are you doing? Or is now the time early in the season to put your arm around him and say, hey, we need you, big fella.
It's tricky.
Let's figure it out.
This is why coaches get paid what they get paid. They gotta be the shrink on the team, too. And maybe if teams are smart, they do employ a shrink, you know, a sports psychologist to help them out in this particular situation.
Part coach, part couch.
Yeah, I think that's part of the brilliance of great coaches, Troy. Is that they can manage their athletes, and they probably have to manage athletes. You know, each athlete is a little bit different. So it's time to connect with them somehow, not ignore them. I mean, this is a psychological thing. It's not a... You say there may be some sort of injury.
There might be. There's speculation there might be an injury he's covering.
Yeah, but I mean, so what? You've got an injury. You're on the court just to not shoot at all? I mean, I think we would know more of an injury if he was hesitant to shooting. It was like 1 for 7 or something like that.
And the commentators haven't hinted at it to cover for him, which is typically, you know, they'll cover for an athlete and say, hey, he's never going to say it, but I know his knee's bothering him. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's been no hint of that. That's why I'm just trying to make sense of it. D-Mac?
It's hard to make sense of.
No. A guy who's a 20, who could score 25 a game won't shoot.
I agree, Bongo.
Three!
He's
young. Oh. He's young. I don't know. What'd they have? Eight plays?
Sorry. Just random sound coming out. Sorry. All right. I screwed that up totally. Troy, my little buttons. I hit my buttons when I shouldn't have. Well, I screwed it all up. All right. Anyways, Dolphins, Rashad Jones. Rashad Jones was benched for a series, and then he refused to come back into the game. What do you make of pro athletes who quit during the game or refuse to go back into a game for pouting sort of reasons?
Yeah, I can't defend it. I mean, I don't know the entire context, but it's if it whether it's a high school level, the college level, or the professional level, unless there's some extenuating circumstances where there was abuse involved or some type of, you know, physical, verbal abuse to the point where you can't take it anymore.
Right.
Unless there's something of that extreme, I will never defend a guy quitting. We had that with the Bills earlier this year with Davis's brother, Vontae Davis, quit.
Crazy.
At halftime.
Yeah.
You can't quit. You just don't quit. You don't quit during a game. You can't get through a next. I mean, in real time, it's, what, an hour to an hour and a half, 90 minutes. You know, if there's a refusal to go in because you feel like you're being set up to fail, to get hurt or something, maybe. But I can't defend an athlete who basically is saying, I want to take my ball and go home.
It did happen with Aqib Talib last year, the last game of the year, and he just quit on the field.
Right.
And go back and watch the first touchdown.
With Kareem Hunt.
That's right. Just go watch it, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And they took him out. And I just, those moments stick with me. Bongos.
Three!
Drew Brees reacted. I don't know if we have that sound there, D-Mac, but Drew Brees reacting to
up again.
Dez Bryant signing with the Saints.
Here we go.
Let's see if you got the sound.
We talked about it during the offseason a little bit. And it was more so just, hey, knowing that a guy like that is out there, and there might come a time when we could need a guy like that, you know? I think at the start of the season, we were in that position, you know, and then all of a sudden, a couple guys get nicked up, you know, and then there becomes a place for him. So definitely been a guy who's been on our radar.
Here's what I like about the move. They're going for it. Just like the Rams in the offseason are going for it. The Patriots go out and get Josh Gordon. There's three or four teams, maybe the Texans with the Bears, that are going for it, D-Mac.
Yeah.
They're like, we're not thinking big term. We're not thinking now and we're winning. We're going to win now and from now on. No, we're winning right now. They're going for it.
Yeah.
That said, Dez Bryant is all-pro diva. If we put a diva team together, for me, he's first-team all-pro.
He's beating out Emmanuel?
Yes.
Wow.
Because he's a much higher profile with the Cowboys. Much higher profile.
All right.
They're the Yankees of the NFL. He's on every week. And, and maybe it's just because we know more about his story. Is it worth the risk that he could possibly mess with chemistry on a team that looks like a Super Bowl contender right now, if not the Super Bowl favorite in the NFC?
I think he could if he was legitimately the best player on the team and he was the loudest voice. But the key is when you go to the Saints or the Patriots or the Packers, you're never going to be that person. I mean, they have established leaders that your voice is never going to be too loud for. That's why it was such a bad spot for the Broncos a couple years ago when Emmanuel Sanders' voice was the loudest in that offensive room, and he wasn't a captain, and he was having, in my opinion, a negative impact on how certain things were operating inside of the locker room. But if you get a better leader on board, then that all kind of goes away. Now, it will be interesting for the Broncos now that Demaryius, who is really, you know, loved by basically everybody, is no longer on the team in case Keenum is struggling a little bit. I mean, I would say it's a great opportunity for Sanders to step up and be that leader. But Dez Bryant doesn't have to worry about it. He has nothing to worry about. He can literally go in, just learn his plays that he needs to learn and be an athlete.
I'm just curious to see what happens the first time he screams at Drew Brees on the sidelines. And
he'll never scream at Drew Brees. If he screams at Drew Brees, that's the last day he's going to be on the team.
It's one of those you can do anything once.
Yeah.
I think it could work. It's like with Manning. How many receivers did we see go toe-to-toe with Manning in an argument?
None. None that I remember.
None that won the argument.
Bongos.
Three!
Yeah, I remember Manning like on a walkthrough when Jacob Tammy dropped the ball, like, you know, ripping him. Wow, it's a walkthrough, and he, you know, Yeah, that wasn't happening here. But, you know, Trevor was never that guy. Paxton was never that guy. Who knows about Chad Kelly?
My favorite Manning story to that.
You know, it doesn't appear Case Keenum's that guy either, by the way.
My favorite Manning story was when he was working with Helton at Duke when he's coming back from surgery, and he literally just ejected and fired all of the intramural kids that were working out with
them. They're screwing them up too bad?
Because their timing was off. And he was just firing guys left and right. And then he started yelling at Helton, "You're cutting the route off. If you're not going to go 4 yards, then don't even bother." And Helton's like, hey. Easy now, man.
we can hit some grounders if you want. We can even this thing out in a second.
I'm just here as a friend, man.
This is the Drive on the Fan.
It's the Drive with Big Al and D-Mac on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Forget about the things I said when I was drunk. Didn't mean to call you that. I can't remember what was said or what you've heard with me. Please tell me why.
Sleeping with the lights on. Close on. I never get the words exactly right. I should. My band, Fatty's Big Chance, we used to do this, but I never sang. Play drums. By the way, I saw Bohemian Rhapsody today.
What'd you think?
The actor, whoever it is who played Freddie Mercury, was unbelievable. I mean, he was great. But the movie itself struggled to find what direction it was really wanting to tell the story in. And it ended up being like just long strings of like concert footage. And so I was trying to figure out, well, what the hell's the story here? Part of the problem with Queen is there just wasn't that much drama with the band. They got together when they were like college students and that was it. Like there wasn't a lot of turmoil. There wasn't a lot of breakups. There wasn't, you know, bad behavior necessarily. There was very light alcohol and drug use, nothing serious. The only fraction of the band is when Freddie Mercury went off for a little solo gig, and he kind of, you know, it was really a lot about his sexuality and what he was revealing and what he wasn't revealing and that sort of stuff. So, but it didn't go too deep into his sickness or illness. It kind of left off in 1985 when he did Live Aid.
Right.
And then, I don't think I'm giving anything away here. And then, you know, it comes up, hey, he died in 1991. So it's not like it took you to the dying days of Freddie Mercury, the final days or anything like that. It just sort of left off on a high note when they performed at Live Aid.
I want to see it.
It's worth going to, but it was okay.
The movie I would want to see, would pay to see, like this moment, would be a documentary and or movie of Guns N' Roses, of Appetite for Destruction.
I don't know if that story is completely done yet, but so it's complicated.
It just every time I think of a band like Guns N' Roses, I think of the line from Behind the Music on VH1, but offstage things were falling apart.
Yeah, that's right.
My favorite line from that was REO Speedwagon when they were like, at one point, we were opening for a ventriloquist in Mexico City, and then they panned to the lead singer and goes, "We weren't going out that way."
That's awesome.
But offstage, things were falling apart.
All right, let's go to Howie. Howie, you're on the Fan. What's up, Howie?
Hey, fellas. How's it going?
What's up?
Super.
Good. Glad to hear it. Quick shout-out to the Fan and Ted Montana Grill.
Nice.
Driving home with my food right now.
Nice.
$50 gift card.
All right on.
Stoked on that. Appreciate it, fellas. I just wanted to say, with the whole Jokic thing, I think everyone's freaking out. I mean, it's four games out of the season. That's just such a small percentage of the season. I mean, I think he's going to get it together. I think he knows he's the highest paid athlete in Denver history. He's going to get it together. He's going to do good things. And I think most importantly, he's going to facilitate. I mean, he's going to get everyone hot. Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, I think he's really just trying to put them in a position to take over. As well as when he has a chance, he'll get there in the paint. He'll use his post moves. He'll develop something that's unstoppable. We saw a lot of that at the end of last season. Unfortunately, they lost to the Timberwolves. I mean, Taj Gibson was just all over him. I don't know how they didn't call
it. It's a weird one, though, Howie. I mean, the guy just didn't shoot. It's unique. Yeah, I got you. Thank you for the call, by the way, Howie. Nobody's doubting Jokic. The guy is a superstar, I think.
What if Bryce Harper went up to bat and didn't swing in four at bats?
It would be bizarre.
I mean, you would be like, what are you doing, dude? Like,
that's did he walk four times or did he strike out?
Let's say he struck out three of those four times.
It would be strange.
Never swung the bat.
Barry Bonds had weird games like that where he would go maybe three bats without ever swinging
the
bat.
But
he was always
walked.
Yeah.
They were trying to bait him into swinging the pitches out of the strike zone. I'll say this. Jokic is lucky he's not a Bronco if he had a game like that. Can you imagine the uproar in football it's harder, but if your running back just decided, I'm not going to run the ball, I just want to be involved in the passing game.
It's strange.
It is bizarre. And like you said, he's the highest paid athlete in Denver. He is one of the most talented we've seen
in
years.
Really?
I believe so on that new contract.
He makes more money than Vaughn or Case Keenum?
In guaranteed money, he does.
He makes more money than Nolan Arenado.
Yes. Well, he's in arbitration this year. He's going to be on a one-year deal for like $25 million.
Wow. Jokic is the highest paid player in Denver.
In Denver sports history, I believe.
Really?
I mean, I'll look it up, but...
Okay. No, I'll take your word for it. I just didn't think of it like that. John, you're on the fan. Hi, John.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I don't know if you guys already covered it or talked about it, but I saw a report this morning that... Elway has become enamored with college offenses.
Yeah, I kind of referenced that because that was the same article they were talking about Eric Bieniemy in.
Yeah.
And I already made a remark that I can't ever imagine Eric Bieniemy being a head coach of anything.
Okay, well, and even if he goes with a different college offensive head coach, my thought with the whole thing is a lot of people are reading into it as, like, oh, he's doing this so we can get a young quarterback that can come in and adapt quickly. But if I recall, wasn't Case Keenum a pretty freaking good college quarterback?
Yeah.
He left with every record, but and it's a great call. He was setting those records at a time when that offense wasn't used in the NFL. So it was like he was doing it in a vacuum. He left the NCAA as the greatest passer in NCAA history, but he was 6 foot and went undrafted. I mean, 6 foot, 6'1". He was kind of Baker Mayfield before Baker Mayfield in some ways statistically, if you go back and look at Keenum's college career. But I have no doubt that their next coach will be offensive minded. I would try to get Lincoln Riley.
Are you convinced that Vijay will be fired?
I just don't know how he saves it from this point, D-Mac.
You win four more games.
Yeah.
You are.
But you missed the playoffs.
7-9, and the games that you lose, of your remaining couple games that you lose, are close.
It's hard for me to see a path to him to stay right now. 7-9, I don't think we do. Let's say they got to 8-8, and then they missed by that one game.
Well, if they're going to blow them out then there's no reason to wait till the end of the season. Where are we going to do it? After the Cleveland game?
Yeah.
You know, because then you can get a head start on looking at, you know, whoever you want, that sort of thing.
The issue that will ruin that...
here's my problem, though, just really quick. John Elway has to be connected to something of his decisions at some point. Okay? So the whole concept that this is all on Vijay, to me, is a absurdly easy scapegoat to other very poor decisions that have led to this moment. So when I think people might misunderstand me when I say, you know, I think we should let this play out even through next year. Because what I'm encouraging the Broncos to do, Troy, is stick to a plan. Tebow, the other day, defending or criticizing Maryland for the about face on the coaching position, basically said, what has happened in this country where we can't commit to things and we're bowed by public pressure? And John made this decision. I think every head coach... I think you got to give any time you get a head coach in the NFL, man, you got to give them 3 years to figure out what's going on and what they can do, and maybe four, to be quite honest with you, Troy. So if John is making a change at head coach, if that does happen, Troy, I'm going to hold his feet to the fire and say, okay, what changes are you making in your own house? Okay, in personnel, what changes are you making? Okay, what different role are you going to have? If you're going to change the head coach, how are you changing? I'm not asking to fire John Elway. That's never going to happen. But you can make changes. And if he doesn't make changes inside of his own house, then to me, that is just scapegoat city to Vijay, and I think that's relatively unfair.
Well, NFL coaches don't get 3 to 4 years typically anymore, DMAC, and they certainly don't in this market. Same reason you don't see the Yankees rebuild, you don't see the Dodgers rebuild. The Lakers are sort of going through it, I guess, now with the line. But these marquee franchises don't rebuild.
Hugh Jackson had 2.5 years before he got fired with one of the worst coaching records of all time.
Yeah, I wouldn't use him as a frame of reference.
Okay. I mean, you know, who doesn't get, I mean, give me a other coach. Chip Kelly got blown out quickly.
Yeah, a couple years. Yeah.
All right. Who else? Who else only gets a couple years? These days.
Rich Kotite back in the day.
No. Give me somebody in the past 20 years.
2 years with the Rams, where he's one of the worst coaches ever.
Is VJ one of the worst coaches ever?
No, not ever, but
Josh McDaniels only got a couple years here, but he got caught cheating.
Yeah.
And doing other things.
Nick Saban?
Saban left on his own record. He left. He just left to Alabama. Typically, you'd like to see a guy get 3 years. That's not the case here. I'm with you in this, that if you're John Elway and you decide to move on from Vance Joseph, it would make sense. It's an offensive mind. I would try for Lincoln Riley, even though that's probably a pipe dream. But in Elway's case, what I would like to see is add more front office people. They just need more bodies. They need more bodies.
So let's see.
And they changed their strategy this offseason. Let's give credit here briefly. This draft class has been remarkable. It looks like a bonanza, especially when in juxtaposition with the previous three.
And I'll tell you why And I'll tell you why that analysis of that draft class, to me, I can take it 180 degrees the other way. Everybody is glowing about the draft class, and I'll give you a different opinion, a different take on that next with Football at 4.